Welcome to Nerd Stalker. I am Adolfo Ferranda.
And I am Greg Valoria, a.k.a. Social Greg. Oh, yeah, that's right. You're over here this time.
Yeah. So, Greg, I wish we were meeting under better circumstances here. We kind of pulled this one together at the last minute, and thus no backdrop and crazy hair.
It's night time. You could tell this is a late night here. But, yeah, it's a shame. Better circumstances. Steve Jobs. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
As Apple puts it, 1955 to 2011. Yeah.
Man, that's pretty shame. I was at a client site and I heard the news and it was just kind of like some kind of weird silence kind of came down for a little while there. It was kind of very strange just thinking about it all. And, you know, as we're all typing away on our Apple products and
how'd you find out, Greg? Was it like via Twitter or something or...
Well, it's kind of funny. I was at a client site going over Twitter, and it didn't come up on our feeds. But actually, we were testing out one of the People Browser products, and you could actually see at 5:10 when they announced it, this 20,000 Twitter spike started to grow.
Wow!
Okay. It was just amazing. Just 20,000. If you said, you know, Steve Jobs death or Steve Jobs died, it was just starting to grow. And it was about 5:15 we were doing. So 20,000 tweets is starting to grow and grow and grow. You could just see this little curve go up. It was just amazing. Just amazing.
Oh.
God, well, you know, he created a $10 billion legacy. So
yeah, and
you
how know, old was he? You know, he
was 55, I believe.
Yeah,
they 56? Call it 56. Sorry.
56.
56. He was born in 1955, so it's wow.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, he followed his career and stuff like that. It was just, you know, Wired had a good write up on his whole career, actually. You know, if you guys have a chance, we'll post it on our Storify later, but Wired did a great synopsis of his career, actually.
There's a lot of like amazing memorials popping up all over the web right now. I know there's a bunch of people that are going down to the Apple store as we speak. There's a large crowd gathering there. People are writing on the windows in lipstick. We miss you, Steve. Justine posted a picture of that. There's a lot of flowers starting to pile up, as you can imagine, at the Apple store right now.
Yeah, and I think Wired had like a picture of like those little tea candles being lit, you know, just a bunch of them. I guess they just went down the street to, I forget what that store is, but they just bought probably all their tea candles out and just started lighting them out in front of the store down there. So,
and Google did something really cool too. If you go to the Google site, it's very, very subtle underneath the Google search button at the bottom. You'll see something that says Steve Jobs. Comma 1955 to 2011, and his name Steve Jobs is linked to apple.com. I mean, that's pretty damn classy of those guys to do that.
Yeah, I think, you know, regardless of, you know, what competition does between companies, you know, you got to honor great men, and he was just one of those type of men, just great. I mean, I was just reading, and let me read something here from Wired. Stephen Levy, like I said, did a great article on it, but he said that, his gene pool was intriguing. His biological parents were, you know, a Syrian immigrant and a graduate student named Johann Simpson, and the unmarried when her son was born on February 24th, 1955. Simpson gave him up for adoption, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And later married John Dolly and had another kid, an award-winning novelist, Mona Simpson. But, you know, I think, you know,
amazing. This guy had everything like going against him. You know what I mean? What an anti-hero. What an amazing. I mean, you know, I posted something on Nerdstalker tonight too, saying goodbye to my hero. You know, one of a very few select people that I consider that I would even put that word hero, you know, on. And this guy had like no college degree. You know,
he
was like weaseled his way into some calligraphy classes before dropping out or something like that. I mean, a complete outsider. He was kind of a hippie influence, counterculture kind of dude that dabbled, like, you know, a lot of other people in that generation in different type of mind altering type of things, right? And carried, I think, forth with him a spirit that that sort of resonated into this company with Woz also, you know, when they got together and really presented something completely out of left field, right? I mean, who are these non-suit wearing long hair weirdos, you know, even thinking that they can get into business, right? I mean,
talk
against all odds. Incredible.
Oh man,
incredible.
You
story.
See some of the pictures there. Well, you know, they had a story on in the same article that talked about the designer who designed the actual Apple II box, right? And he was actually kind of laughing, reflecting back on it. And he was saying that, you know, these guys look really kind of strange to me, and I really wanted my money up front, but Jobs convinced me to take my money later.
That's right. That's right. This guy could just charm and talk his way into anything. You know, so Greg, what's your first memory of Apple that you can on your childhood that you can remember?
I think it was the Mac. 1984 maybe. Yeah, something like that. I mean, the Mac and a little bit of Apple II, but definitely the Mac I remember. You know, this little squarish box with a little mouse sticking out of it. I mean, it was this tabletop thing with a and I looked at it and it didn't look like a PC at all, really. Mm-hmm. You know, personal computer, not an IBM PC.
Yeah.
But you know, the interface was just incredible. You know, it used that little 3.5-inch floppy disk.
Yeah.
You throw it in there, and, you know, suddenly, you know, the world appeared, right? I mean, it was just such an easy user interface. And like, so what was your impressions of, you know, Apple in
the early days, too? I was blown away by computers. You know, from the get-go, when they first came out, when I was, let's say, how old am I now? 41, something like that. So now you know, people. Yeah. And so, I mean, I saw the beginning of this stuff, you know, when I was a kid. I could never afford this stuff until later. And after doing lots of crazy jobs and things like that to try to save money in order to buy one of these things. My first version that I could actually purchase was, it looked like a pizza box. It was called the Quadra that Apple released. And it was this big, giant-like thing, but I was in absolute heaven, man, when I bought it. And I think the printer was, like, even more money, right, or something like that. And everything was, at that time, super expensive, super premium, although it's premium now. But I remember seeing those early, the first Apples in, like, you know, some of my friends who had money, or in some of the schools that I would visit or something.
Yeah, sure.
And seeing these machines and just being just blown away by this little colored Apple icon and what was happening behind the scenes, all these, you know, goofball retro games, if you could even call them that at that time then, and you know, all the things that they were running. But I remember getting my first Quadra, my Apple Quadra computer, and getting all the applications that I don't even remember the version of the OS back then, and I forget their sort of like their word equivalent back then. They were using their office suite kind of thing that they had to develop themselves, and just thinking, oh my God, I can run an entire business, you know, as a teenager or something on this, right?
But
that's when it sort of resonated that this thing's gonna allow anyone to, you know, be a business, be an industry kind of thing. And that's the type of optimism, you know, that I think that they gave, well, some, one of the many, you know, type of thoughts I think that they gave to people, you know, their consumers or army.
Yeah. Well, you know, the one thing that hit me about Apple was that, you know, PCs were like the standard in the workforce, but when you went to education, it was Mac.
Right.
You know, and that kind of hit me a little bit. You know, I was always kind of scratching my head, you know, why is that? And, you know,
that's a great point.
You know, it's an easy use, right? And you know, and will be known that, you know, they were slowly cultivating young generations to start to think about Macs a little bit more than PCs. You know, I mean, it took a while, but it eventually happened, right?
And also, I think they were going for, even back then, you can see that that was sort of an offshoot of going for the consumer, the general consumer, as opposed to the enterprise, right, or the business, you know, which they never really made a serious attempt for, it seems, and it's and it worked out quite well in the end, you know, or in this, I should say, in this, you know, incarnation of Apple.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Jobs' vision when they were looking at, when I was reading this article, was really, you know, personal computers are more than just something for nerds, is what they were saying. Mm-hmm. He was saying, or, mm-hmm. you know, they were interpreting. It was really something that an everyday person could potentially use to make their life a little bit better, mm-hmm. you know. So,
yeah,
I agree with your point there. I think that's a very good point you bring out. It became something more than just a piece of hardware with a bunch of parts in it that, you know, you had to kind of be an electrical engineer to make sure it worked and turned on every, you know, 10 minutes.
Sure. It represented hope, right? For, I think, a lot of people, you know, and especially designers gravitated hugely to this thing. Not only, you know, developers, obviously, and tech enthusiasts, but like designers, like professional artists and things like that, ended up adopting, you know, Apple. And I think, what's interesting is at this point now, I think Apple is partially responsible too, through not only that, you know, their input into sort of the user interface and the beauty of the hardware also, and the user experience, but it also benefited designers also, bringing them, you know, elevating up them to the actual management table to make decisions kind of thing. You know, no one back then, I don't think designers were really taken as seriously as, you know, managers or programmers even, and a lot of other types. And I think actually industrial design was a bit of an afterthought, especially in computers and personal electronics. Yeah. We could say Sony to some extent was kind of leading that for a while with the Walkman, et cetera.
Right.
But it wasn't really until Apple, you know, and came along and sort of brought back this notion of the importance of the beauty of this thing, you know, like industrial design and elevating the designer as an important person again, you know, back when we can look back at Martin Brahms or some, you know, those type of influences. But what they did for the design community is huge.
I agree with you. I mean, I was an engineer, I mean, you know, and you know, they paid us quite well, but you know, when I now that I look back and really more on the web tech side of things now, you know, user experience is really everything. I mean, you know, sure, you know, hardware has evolved over the years, but really, if you think about it, you know, Jobs had a vision for user interface usability, you know, and you know, it came true, you know, eventually, because, you know, the hardware eventually just became just tool, like a hammer. Mm-hmm. You have to figure out how to use the hammer on the nail, right? So I appreciate that more, even being a hardware person, that, you know, I agree with you. The design is really, you know, front and center now, where and we appreciate it a lot more, I think, because of that. I think because of what Apple's done to our lives, you know. The iPod was definitely, when they brought it out, you know, I thought pretty sexy looking when it came out. You know, it was kind of different. I was kind of like, wow, that thing really plays music? Really?
Yeah.
You know?
Seriously,
hard disk and everything.
I know. I was writing down some notes on, like, some of the things that Apple has done. And this is, I'm just scratching the surface, you know, of like you know, the Apples, the whole Apple line. You know, we can talk about the Cube, which I thought personally was a beautiful piece of machinery that didn't really catch on. It was a fanless computer that was just gorgeous, right? And then the first probably silent computer, in my opinion, and then the iMac, another huge development, right, in personal computing. And then, as you mentioned, the iPod, which, you know, it was the Sony Walkman back in our day, and then along came the the Apple iPod, revolutionized an industry completely. But they wouldn't be stopped, of course. Then they released the iPhone, which completely changed telephony and that whole market. It's still raging. And then here we go with the iPad, right? Which was a massive, you know, undertaking and a massive change to everything I mean, these are, it's like, it's crazy. This is like Babe Ruth, like over and over and over again, just home run.
Yeah, and what hit me about the iPod is, you know, their vision of bringing out a music store to support it.
Yeah, exactly. I haven't even talked about software here. Jesus, I know.
Yeah, right.
You're right, man.
You know, I mean, that's changed our lives. I mean, it's basically pushed the model towards, I mean, everyone's copied that model, you know, Amazon store, right.
Right, no. And the app store,
store now. Yeah, everyone has an app store now. So I think, you know, that model had definitely, you know, he realized that, you know, with hardware, you need some sort of software to kind of help it along somehow, and you know, with the iPod, he created the Apple Store, you know, so a place where you could get all the music you want and download it, and everything was cool, and wow, I mean, and you could get it legally.
Yeah, I know, right?
You don't have to use your torrent.
Yeah, and then we have the lesser known things too, like FireWire, you know, H.264, QuickTime. Right. I've mentioned these before. There's a lot of other stuff, I'm sure. All the mice, you know, all the Apple mice that have been introduced, you know, all this crazy stuff. All their amazing monitors that they've released, beautiful displays. You know, there's the Airport Express, obviously, and just really creating this notion of ease of use. You know, I talk to so many Luddites who I completely recommend, you know, what computer should I get, Adolfo? Get an Apple, get the whole Apple setup thing. And then the next day they tell me, you know what, I set it up by myself. And this is like a big deal for these people, you know, because they would not, you know, a cable scares them, you know. And I plugged it in and it worked and it was great and I can't believe it. And I turned it on and I'm talking to my friend in Canada on FaceTime, you know, on my computer. I'm like, why do I even have a telephone? And I'm, you know, that's a huge accomplishment when you can hit that market like that and not call someone like us, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Go to their house and help them out or something.
Yeah, I think my brother, who's definitely in that category, calls me up when, you know, he can't get the browser to turn on. So I think it just goes to speak the difference between what a PC can do and what the ease of use, like you said, an Apple product can do. Well, turn on and go. I mean, it's just like a toaster, right?
Yeah.
You press the button. Toast comes out. So I
you know, and his accomplishments were massive too in terms of business, you know, because let's think about it, what he did with, you know, the first with him and Woz and going to the homebrew computer clubs and demoing the Apple, you know. And then as you said, pushing it into education markets, actually making a business of this, and then a real business of it got bigger and bigger. To the point where they needed a board of directors, a new CEO, and they hired, you know, unfortunately, John Sculley from Coca-Cola. He came in, later determined they needed...
No, I think it was Pepsi, though.
Pepsi, okay.
I think it was Pepsi.
And then they got rid of jobs. He actually fired Steve, right? And so Steve was on the outside. Steve started a company called Next OS, you know, Next Computers.
Right. Oh, my gosh. And,
and then they were talked back, and, you know, Scully's gone. Gil Emilio, I believe, comes in. I think there was a few other another CEO as well that I'm forgetting. And they hire Jobs back because they buy Next OS, and in the acquisition also get Steve Jobs. So here he is, the cast out, back into the kingdom again. Gil Emilio's on the outs, and Steve Jobs is the CEO again. Steve Jobs puts an end to the clone computers, you know, which I had one of power computing computers. They were making clone apples for a while there. He kiboshed that. And then we have the modern day Apple Renaissance, if you want to call it that. It's what a phenomenal story, right? I mean, how could you not love this guy? You know, even if you hate Apple, what an incredible story, you know?
Well, did he, when he was with Next, was he in Pixar at the same time? I forgot what the six.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I forget too. I think he might have been in the early stages of Pixar as well. Yeah, that's right. I left out Pixar. Yeah, well, I wrote somewhere down here too. I got a note here. Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Pixar and Disney, right? So, as we've mentioned previously, also is that Pixar was later then acquired by Disney, and then Jobs is put on Disney's board of directors. I mean, that's a huge, huge honor, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think it was like $7.4 billion later for Pixar, yeah. You know, in like 2006. I mean, it was kind of like, wow, yeah. Wow. You know, and with that Toy Story movie, I mean, it's just kind
of
like...
At 56 years old, by the age of 56, how phenomenal is that? I mean, that's...
Yeah.
You know, and my heart goes out to his family, and I think he had two children too, and, you know, yeah. but a lot of people are, you know, comparing him already to, like, you know, they say, you know, I've heard Leo Laporte call him the Mozart of technology, or, you know, people are saying he was like the Picasso of technology. A lot of comparisons to Thomas Edison, right?
Yeah, you know, when I was reading this article, he actually had pancreatic cancer diagnosed in July of 2004. I didn't realize it was that long.
Yeah. Well, he got it replaced. I believe it was a kidney or some. I don't remember the details, but he had something literally physically taken out, and then I think he hung on for another year or two or something like that. Yeah. That's a brutal disease. Any type of like a, you know, organ type of cancers, it's not, that's you usually don't come back from that.
Yeah. It spreads rather quickly. Most of the, you know, friends and relatives that had something like that, and it's a lot, not pretty, and it goes pretty quickly, like you said, but you know, he hung on for a long time. I mean, I just reading something, once he found out that he had cancer, he addressed the Stanford graduating class of 2005, and it was kind of...
That's an awesome speech. Everyone should see that.
Oh, yeah. And let me just quick quote here. He says, "No one wants to die. Even people who want to go to heaven don't want to die to get there," he told the Stanford graduates. "And yet death is the destination we all share. No one has ever escaped it. And that is as it should be, because death is a very likely the single best invention of life. It's life's change agent. It clears out the old to make way for the new. So your time is limited, so don't waste it living someone else's life." I mean, wow, that was so powerful when I read that.
So cool.
Powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah, very cool. It just, like you said, it just kind of sums up the drive this individual had for, you know, doing the best, you know, making the best.
A lot of people are, you know, are surmising at the iPhone 4S release yesterday, actually, announcement obviously Tim Cook and those people knew, you know, that this was pending. Probably, I believe there was an empty seat on purpose that was, I believe, representational, for Steve sort of like being there. I think it was, I one has to wonder if they actually pushed this out a little quick or something, you know, in order to do this for Steve, right? To push out one last thing or something. I don't know.
I think so, because the rumor I heard from a lot of Apple friends, you know, employees, which, you know, will remain nameless, obviously, you know, actually a lot of things that I've heard was the third week of October. So I think your assumption was absolutely right. I think they pushed it out, and I think they pulled out all the stops to try to, you know, get this deal done, just so that they, you know, could see one more last of his product, you know, go out the door, you know. So
yeah,
it was nice gesture, you know.
There's a lot of great, you know, memorials, as I said, websites popping up. Another one I have to let you guys know about is blog.grantrobertson.com. He has this amazing sort of like a photo montage of history of these really cool historical pictures of Steve Jobs. I know Boing has just posted something really cool too.
That's nice.
With him and these pictures of him, I think like on the cover of Time magazine. And I'd heard that he actually, there was an interview that Obama did actually with Stephanopoulos on television, where Stephanopoulos was, you know, talking about his technology and saying, "Hey, I notice you have an iPad too." And then Obama's like, "Yeah, Steve gave me the iPad 2 a little bit early." So apparently Obama got the iPad 2 before the general public, you know, and had to keep this secret about this thing. You know, I guess you can trust the president, right? But the funny part is that here's the president of the United States sort of brag/name dropping Steve, you know, first name, because
yeah,
you know, we,
yeah, exactly,
you know, because they're on that kind of level, right, together, because he's that, because Jobs is that badass, right?
Yeah, exactly. Totally.
How cool is that, right?
You know? Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, only in America, right? Too right. I mean, the, yeah. You know, that a product would have so much impact that the president of the United States had to name drop it, right? Or a person like that. I mean, you know, think about it. It's just. Yeah. Just amazing.
I remember, you know, so. You know, going back and being able to get into these, a lot of the early Apple worlds, right? The Mac worlds,
oh,
actually.
Really? Nice.
And I was in, and getting into the keynote wasn't that tough back then. I mean, it was not a big deal. I mean, you could just wait. If you waited, kind of came early, and you could, you yeah. had a front row seat or a great spot to see Steve. And
wow.
I have to admit, like, each time it was awesome, man. The dude could just it was like a concert or rock show or something, you know. And each year it got more and more crowded, obviously, to the point where, like, you know, it's just madness. But there, you know, I think he is really responsible. You see all these other CEOs now trying to kind of, there's sort of a model now for giving a keynote speech, it seems like, for release of a piece of hardware. And I think that he really defined what that is now.
Yeah. No, I could imagine a lot of his stints with Hollywood and everything kind of influenced some of that. I mean, I mean when you look at there's a video on that same article I had mentioned earlier from Wired.com. They show the video of the Mac video. I think it's all over the place. I mean, people have seen it many, many times, but it kind of showed you the type of person he was even at that, you know, earlier stage with the Macintosh and how they released it. And it's very nice. It's yeah. a nice tribute to him and, you know, what he has done for the computing world. So, you know, we're going to miss him for sure, you know.
Yeah. So what do you think? I mean, let's look into our crystal ball now, right? One has to wonder the future. This is such a huge, massive loss, not only for Apple, but for, I think, the entire, you know, the world, really, of innovation, period, right? And technology. This, you know, people always looked forward to this revolutionary, ground-changing type of new device or piece of software that was on this amazing device. And you look around, and I don't know about you, man, but I don't see anyone in that sort of Michael Jordan type of league, you know what I mean?
No. In fact, I read something kind of ridiculous here the other day. It was kind of like Larry Ellison. I think there was the Oracle thing going on downtown, right? He had mentioned that they're the Apple of enterprise. And oh, I'm sorry, I had to just laugh at that one because it was just kind of like they name drop Apple and right. they were, you know, use it in the same, you know, standpoint to make Oracle look good in terms of enterprise. Right? I was going like, wow, what is this dude thinking?
Ellison was quoted before as saying, like, those guys were idiots ever to get rid of Steve Jobs, you know, the first time he knew. You know?
Right.
Another really cool quote, too, is
by
Microsoft former CEO Bill Gates actually said he's going to miss Steve, you know, quite a bit.
Mm.
I mean, these guys were definitely, like, you know, two incredibly, like, you know, competitive individuals, and they were at the top of their game, and you gotta, you know, it's probably like two of the best prize fighters in the world, you know, looking at each other, and you gotta respect each other, right? I mean,
I think it's just kind of like, you know, if you go back into the old school days of Magic and Larry Bird, right? I mean, you know, great example of people competed with one another, you know, probably said some things they shouldn't say to each other at times just because they were just great competitors, but they had a lot of respect for one another. And that's really what you want, you know? I mean, there's no reason to, you know, tear down the other person is because you're competing with them, because, you know, if they're doing a good job, you have to admit that, because if they're doing a good job, then it just pushes you to become better as far as I'm concerned. So,
you know, this is a quote from Business Week that Steve gave, and I think it's a very one of the telling sort of things is, it's quote, "It's really hard to design products by focus groups. A lot of times people don't know what they want until you show it to them." You know, often, you know, they're not really known. Apple's obviously not known for the focus groups, and you know, a lot of design researchers sort of like, you know, that's one of the sort of tenets to what they do. And this guy completely bucking the trend in a way like, you know, we're going to release something and you're going to like it. And oftentimes, I mean, it worked, right? I mean, sometimes obviously they would iterate a bit, right, off of an initial thing. I mean, look at the iPod, how it has, you know, sort of evolved, right?
Yeah.
But it
yeah.
was one of those things, I mean, like, you're going to like it. Here you go. This is it.
You know, and it was kind of neat what Apple did with adopting, I would say, you know, some cutting edge technology, like going from the hard drive to the flash in the air. That was pretty ballsy, I thought, you know, but, you know, they kept on driving that edge, I always felt, of pushing their competition somewhere else as well. You know, it's like they always did something a little more dramatic. I think that's why people were a little bit disappointed about the 4S. But I think I go back to what you had said earlier in the broadcast, that I think they moved up the timeline a little bit, you know, and I think that, you know, there might have been something else they wanted to do, but, you know, because maybe some of the things that they were knowing about Steve and, you know, his days were limited, they pushed out something else. So because I think now we're almost conditioned out of Apple to expect that.
Right.
Unfortunately, right. You know, there's always something edgy about something that they do, and we're always expect that. And unfortunately, with Steve Jobs gone, I don't know who's going to drive that edge now. And, you know, hopefully, you know, he's trained a lot of people along the way, but, you know, there's probably only one Steve Jobs, right?
So, yeah.
You know.
That's true.
You know, so.
Another you know, another really through... great quote that he said was, I'm just busting out the other one.
Yeah.
Here. Picasso had a saying. Good artists copy, great artists steal. We've always been shameless about stealing great ideas. I think part of what made the Macintosh great was that people working on it were musicians, poets, artists, zoologists, and historians who had happened to be the best computer scientists in the world. That's wow. amazing. That's totally cool.
That is cool. I mean, another thing you guys should check out is Mashable just released, a few minutes ago, 13 inspirational quotes. This is we're in the quote thing, so I think you guys should check that out. We'll put that
What's really neat about the last quote that I mentioned, too, is that now you see Facebook, and I know Leo Laporte is one of the people that has been saying, you know, like, with Facebook, you know, a lot of the most important people to hire right now are, like, sociologists, right? It's, of all people, these liberal arts peoples, you know, not only should they have sort of a technology background to some extent, but you have to know people, right? And I think that's definitely an angle that was just inherent within Steve Jobs. I mean, he understood people, obviously.
Yeah, I think... You know, when you look at these leaders, you know, inspirational leaders, charismatic leaders, however you want to call them, you know, there's a reason why, you know, many follow them. And you know, I think that, you know, it was part of his power of convincing people and to say, you know, let's step over the line. It'll be fine. And don't worry. It'll be okay. You know, there was one story where Woz was working for HP at the time when they created the Apple product, right? Apple One. And he actually, you know, Jobs knew he needed a hardware wizard like Woz to make this thing go, right? So what he did was he talked to all Woz's, you know, family members to put pressure on him to quit his job at HP. How cool is that? I mean, to have the power around, you know, at that early age to go say, you know, I need this guy, so guess what? I'm gonna sign this guy up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, man.
I'm gonna do whatever it takes to sign this guy up, you know, and I wish I had a millionth of what he had in him to do a lot of that type of stuff.
Yeah, man, that's gutsy. I remember everyone calling everything a failure. I remember Ballmer calling the iPhone a complete failure. Who's gonna pay $500 or whatever it was for a phone? You're kidding me, right? Or the iPad? Everyone was poo-pooing the iPad. It doesn't come with a USB connector and no external driver. Well, you can't get to any of that stuff. And, oh, man, a no changeable battery and this and that. And then when I got it, and the first tweet or one of the first tweets I said about this thing was, man, I was one of the geeks, the first people in line to get the iPad 1 because I was determined to get this thing. And I never regret it. I was blown away how incredible this thing was. You know, I'm just like blown away. I mean, how cool is that?
I remember when the iPhone was released here in the United States. Maybe I'd say 9 months before it was released in Tokyo, and I was traveling to Japan a lot. Mm-hmm. And I remember waking up in the morning, and again, you know. Talk about desire, right? They just released the phone to the Japanese market, and you could see this long line of Japanese, you know, and they had the, you know, TV Tokyo and all Fuji TV and all like down there. And it was like slightly raining, I remember. Wow. And there's these people just braving that, just kind of like, I'm going to get mine.
This magic
I'm
going to
get mine today.
Yeah, and you're just when I got mine and people holding them out and everyone's cheering, all these, you know, you're just like, whoa, I haven't even opened this thing yet, and it gets even cooler after that, you know. Remember the iPod, how cool that was? I was like, I could have all my music on this thing. Are you effing kidding me? Yeah. This little thing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You don't need a CD player anymore?
Right. I look at the alternatives. I think I have one of the alternative MP3 players, and it was just terrible interfaces, right? It's like, how do I even get to my music? I lost it, and I have to go back deep. And they just had all this stuff just solved. You know, all these problems were just solved, man. It was just like, I didn't even think they could improve the iPod 1. You know, I'm like, how do you improve on something so amazing? You know?
Exactly. You know, and I think one quote I think that covers that thing is, I think Jobs said, you know, design is not just what it looks like. Design is how it works.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. I mean, we really we have to thank that team that he had, like he said, that was made up of all different types of people. The famous names that we know now, you know, with Woz and Johnny Ive, Tim Cook, obviously, and a lot of those guys too, you know, and the rest of the people there. I hear that they're flying the flag at half mast at Infinite Loop. That would be Apple headquarters.
Oh, wow.
Down in Cupertino right now.
That's really cool. Wow, looks like you got the broadcast. You got it streamed right in there. So you're watching everything unfold.
Giving stalker updates. Everyone out there. Is
yeah, there you go. There you go.
A day late or something, but we'll see.
It's okay. I think this is the Nerd Soccer tribute to Steve Jobs tonight.
So. Well, thanks, Greg, man, for getting together at the last minute all this.
Anyway, it's been fun, man. Sorry, it wasn't under more happier times, like a product release from Apple or anything. But I think this kind of warranted a Nerd Soccer podcast tonight. So I appreciate it.
Well, so we got to celebrate Steve's life. So you know, I'm sure he'd rather all of us be partying for him at this point. And so thank you, Steve. You know, cheers.
Yep. Tip the hat.
Cool.
So anyway, all right, man.
Thanks, everyone.
We'll catch you on a regular broadcast. Yeah. Take care.
See you next time.
Here's to the crazy ones. The misfits, the rebels, the troublemakers, the round pegs in the square holes, the ones who see things differently. They're not fond of rules, and they have no respect for the status quo. You can quote them, disagree with them, glorify or vilify them, but the only thing you can't do is ignore them, because they change things. They push the human race forward. And while some may see them as the crazy ones, we see genius. Because the people who are crazy enough to think they can change the world are the ones who do.